Hello, listener. What you're about to hear is a What Are We Da Show patron unlock. This is material which our Patreon supporters have early access to. If you'd like to experience these episodes when they're at their freshest, become a What Are We Da Show patron today at patreon.com/WARUIDESHOU.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. Welcome to Warrior Desho's second stream. This is us covering the anime Given, and we're up to episode 6. I'm a creep. I'm a widow. We're actually going to be talking about the episode, though, and not Radiohead's, like, you know, titular song from My Iron Lung. Although, I've actually done my homework this time, actually listened to that song before coming into this, because I felt it might be relevant. It turns out it was, but we'll come to that in a moment. I am Shaden, and joining me as always is my ever stalwart companion and fan of all things anime, the Soul Doctor.
2 + 2 = 5 is a Radiohead song that is good.
Doesn't even surprise me that they would reference Orwell at some point. That's like their kind of thing. All right. So,
how you doing, everybody? It's Friday here. Maybe this will get to you on Friday. If not, and it's the weekend or whatever, I hope you're doing well. We're doing great. We're ready to talk some wonderful, comfy, delightful BL for all of you.
Hell yes, hell yes. And hey, you didn't even specify the Friday, so technically we could get this out next week and no one would know you were wrong.
Exactly.
Until
exactly.
I said that out loud and I fucked it up. Oops. Me and my big mouth. How typical.
We've not given the date, so I think we're still in the clear.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. So if you're not familiar with our format here, this is just going to be talking points on the episode and not a plot summary. So we're going to assume that you've already seen Given Episode 6 in full and know the details. We'll provide context where it's appropriate, but we won't otherwise do our usual format of going into exhaustive detail on the plot. So let's get started. Doc, do you want to lead off with a talking point?
Yeah, so as I've been doing lately, I will put my talking point in the form of a question to you, Shadon.
Ooh!
So, there's a point mid-ish way through the episode where Ritsuka is talking about, Ritsuka Uenoyama is talking about his feelings when he hears Mafuyu singing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, you know, how it's kind of a mixture of different things. Like, it makes him feel queasy. It makes him want to fight Mafuyu, right? Despite the fact that what they were talking about, him and Akihiko, was that Mafuyu has, like, a clear voice. It's very pretty. As contrasted to kind of the thrashing and whatnot of the guitar playing. So I just wanted to ask you what you think is going on there in terms of how Uenoyama, like, how he's responding to, like, what his feelings are about the voice. Like, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that Uenoyama is actually, I mean, this is a boys love show, so there's no surprises for guessing what he's feeling in terms of, like, you know, what it is, what we believe it is as the audience, but you're asking what he thinks it is. And I think that it's fair to say, like, when you're that age, or even when you're as old as I am and decrepit as I am, I mean, it certainly happens to me sometimes you encounter, you know, feelings for someone that you might not necessarily be able to label appropriately. So I think that this is him going through the process of realizing that he might have strong feelings towards Mafuyu, but not being able to adequately or properly label them, which is why he labels it as queasiness. Like, you use common terms and points of reference that you are already familiar with. Like, that's where the idea of being lovesick comes from, I guess, after all. So I think that this is the point where he has recognized he has a feeling of some sort, but he hasn't yet properly processed it and given it its due labeling. So, given time, sick one in the sip jar. I'm actually start shaking it around a bit. You're going to hear some real rattling. But yeah, I think at this point, like, Ueno-Yama definitely has strong feelings for Mafuyu, but I think that he accepts their presence but doesn't understand their meaning. That, I think, is what's going on here, and that's why he's relating in those particular terms.
So, that's all really good. I think part of what I was thinking about, and so what you were talking about, right, is what he thinks it is. Part of what I think is happening beyond, like, whatever Ueno-Yama thinks, is, like, and this could be me kind of reading my own, like, projecting my own kind of personal stuff out there, but, like, when I, so I'm married to an artist, full disclosure, like, when I sense pain in her art, I want to do something to make it better.
Ah, I see where you go with this. Carry on.
Yeah, I want to physically do what I can to make it better, and it, for me, kind of inside, it hurts me that the person that I care about is experiencing pain, you know. But, like, over time, I've had to, like, try to restrain that impulse and distance myself from it a little bit and think, you know, this is just part of, like, the human experience, these sort of these pain, these feelings, and they don't, like, necessarily define you as a person. Like, just because a person has, you know, an angst or kind of emotional pain, it doesn't mean it's sort of encompassing their entire life, and art is actually a really good way of letting out those feelings you have so that they don't kind of overwhelm you. And maybe that's a bit of what's going on. Again, I could be projecting, but maybe, like, Ueno-Yama cares about Mafuyu so much that when he kind of hears those kind of deeply buried feelings of loss and loneliness and sadness in Mafuyu's voice, like, his stomach drops and he wants to do something, but he doesn't really know how to handle it because he doesn't understand how he feels about him.
Yeah. And indeed, like, the points we've both made, I think, are not mutually exclusive. It could potentially be both. And maybe he doesn't know if, you know, it's his feelings of empathy that are one, you know, driving him to want to try and do something, even if he ultimately feels he can't, because, as evidenced by the show, he doesn't do anything in this specific episode in the scene I'll point out later. Or it could indeed be his feelings of affection and, you know, romantic attraction to him. And it could be both. I mean, he's a teenager, you know. But, I mean, even as an older, you know, bastard like me, I still struggle with my emotions a lot of the time and feelings, you know, for people. So God knows what it must be like for him. And he's like, well, the only family member we've been introduced to that he has is Yayoi, who would be going to her for advice for quite a while. She'd probably just start throwing stuff at him.
Yeah, probably so. I'd like to think that there's, like, a kind sisterly heart buried underneath all the combativeness.
And
that,
yeah, that's just her way of showing affection. Yeah. That is quite possible. Indeed, I think we're not quite out of the woods. We've seen more from her yet, like, especially given Akihiko's role in the show and her own relationship to him. But
I forgot they used to be a thing until they walked in together.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, like, they were a thing, but because I was just sort of had Akihiko in my head as, you know, gay boy. But it's like, no, he obviously is bisexual because he's had this thing with Yayoi. It maybe has a thing now with this unnamed raven-haired fellow and has some tension between he and Haruki. So, yeah.
Well,
definitely.
Well, to be fair, he is a drummer, so he knows how to hit several things at once. Yeah. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba!
Oh, sweet goodness. Okay. What is your first your first discussion point here.
Okay, so I'm going to actually elaborate on something that you brought up, which is very handy. Thank you for the springboard there. That's much appreciated. You were talking about the idea of, you know, art as expression and a means of communicating pain. So if you viewer or listener at home have, you know, previously been following Worried Esho, you might recall that we covered a little movie by a certain insignificant nobody named Mamoru Oshii, and that film was not really worth talking about. It was called Angel's Egg. You recall that? I don't recall that. Scrambled my brain a little bit. Aha, scramble
yep,
joke.
I recall
on.
It.
Okay.
I recall it very fondly.
Indeed. And I've been thinking on this a bit because Angel's Egg as a work of anime, or indeed a work of fiction to me, falls in the same category as a couple of other stuff that I personally have read, such as Philip K. Dick's Ubik. I may potentially mention this in the previous podcast, so if I am repeating myself and you know that, then I apologise, but just to recover old ground quickly, there's Ubik, there's also Kurt Vonnegut's, what was it called again? Slaughterhouse-Five.
Slaughterhouse-Five.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Which was his own, you know, way of dealing with the the destruction of Dresden and the wholesale slaughter that happened there. Or, I suppose, given I've started watching this recently and I could be talking out my ass, but indulge me if you will, what about Ikuhara's own Moaru Penguin Drum? There's a not insubstantial amount of art out there, be it books, anime, TV, etc., that in my opinion are created not specifically for the purposes of entertaining, although they can do that function as well, but more as a way of passing and expressing and even expunging feelings that relate to a traumatic or painful experience. I mean, we discussed, for example, in the Angel's Egg podcast about the idea of Mamoru Oshii doing that film as a way of him reconciling his feelings with his Christian faith versus the reality of his life and the difficulty he was going through with his family. Am I right in thinking that? I'm not recalling.
Yes, absolutely. That is correct.
Yeah.
No question. He had lost his faith, and also he was having his daughter was, he was having issues, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So why am I bringing this all up? Because obviously those are different things and they're not given the show. Well, what do you think Mafuyu is currently being tasked to do here? He's being asked to create lyrics for a song. And obviously he's burdened with the death of Yuki, who we learn a tiny little bit more about in this episode. So, I think the thing that's going to have to be reconciled, and this is something that I reckon that Ueno Yama is going to have to deal with as well, is why is Yuki doing this? Why is he in the band? I've mentioned this previously. Is he there because it's good for Ueno Yama and others to have such a strong vocalist? Or is it good for him as a means of expressing and, as was stated, using music as communication to get his feelings out there, to pass the trauma that he has had previously, that he's dealt with? Is his work of art going to be expressly for entertainment, or is it going to be his own, you know, kind of medicine, his own kind of way of healing, his own therapy? That, I think, is going to become an interesting part of the show's, or at least I hope it is. I hope it becomes a part of the show's idea. Indeed, I mentioned before about Radiohead's song Creep, which forms the title of this episode. So I actually decided, you know what? Stop being a lazy bum all your life. Actually do some fucking research, you useless twit. And I decided to actually listen to said song, even though I hadn't heard it in years. And there's a particular line in it, you know. I think it goes something like this, like, you know, I know it hurts and I don't belong, but I don't belong here. And I wonder if that is a reflection on Mafuyu's place in the band, that he doesn't necessarily belong there, not because he himself is not talented, but rather because it hurts him to be there. And indeed, there is evidence, I believe, to point to that, or at least to point to him still being in pain, despite assertions to the contrary, which I'll cover in my next talking point.
Go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, no, go on.
Oh, I hope being in the band helps him more than hurts. I mean, I know that being near music and a part of music, that there's a reason it might bring back some painful memories and associations. But I don't know. I feel like he seemed happy, and I feel like that was kind of, in some ways, what I took away from the scene in which he's talking to the blonde-haired kid, his childhood friend from his past. They're funnily enough, they're talking by that same vending machine that he and Uenoyama had their long discussion with.
The only vending machine in town.
It's the one outside of his workplace.
Yeah.
But it's funny that they're there, and it made me think of, like, okay, I bet, you know, I think Mafuyu, in between these two talks, has probably grown a lot. And I think it did surprise blonde kid that when he asked him, like, so, what are you doing in the band? Are you doing it to try to stay positive? Or are you doing it to forget? And then Mafuyu just smiled at him, and he's like, you know, I don't really know either, but it looked like it made him happy. So I hope it does make him happy. And now obviously it's going to provide him a way to, or we hope, like, kind of deal with a lot of the thoughts and feelings that he has.
Yeah, I suppose the question needs to be asked is to again go back to Mamoroshi here. Is Mafuyu going to create his own angel's egg, or is he going to create something, say, like Ghost in the Shell? What is the ultimate product he's going to make here, and what is the purpose of it? And moreover, what is Uenoyama going to push him to do?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to push him to, you know, do the thing he needs to for his sake or for the sake of the band?
Very interesting. Do you find yourself responding to those kind of deeply personal works of art? Because I feel like I do, even though they may be considered more niche. It's like, I find, like, many times I find a deeper kinship with them and a deeper kind of resonance in relation, because the feeling is just sort of laid bare, or if not, like, made obvious, like, by the message or whatever of the movie, the mood of it a lot of times. I don't know, like, or not even a movie, like a painting or a book or any kind of media, but yeah, that isn't, you know, if you're going to have this dichotomy, right, of like products for entertainment versus like the very personal thing, like, I don't know, I find myself responding to those a lot and feeling that they might even be more relatable than something that was made to be palatable and relatable. What do you think?
Well, if I may again dip back to Angel's Egg here, like, Angel's Egg in a vacuum, for me, I'm not gonna lie, I found it a bit dull. I found it a bit incomprehensible. I wasn't quite sure what the point of it was. But then, of course, we discussed that. I learned Mamoroshi's history, and then it became crystal to me. Like, I understood it as a work and its meaning and what it was, and it felt like, essentially, like I was watching the tortured scream of a man who had for far too long held his own voice. Same with Ubik, Philip K. Dick's work. Like, Philip K. Dick's he's done some pretty experimental sci-fi. Like, I mean, if you don't know, he was, for example, the gentleman behind Blade Runner, although it was known as Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. He's done fucking tons of shit, like Total Recall. I could go on.
Minority Report.
Yep. Correct. A lot of stuff that's been adapted. A Scanner Darkly. I could spend hours talking about this.
He wrote what became Blank Check, I think. I don't know what the story was called, but the Ben Affleck movie. Is it called Blank? Not Blank Check. What is it called? Oh, shit.
Paycheck?
Paycheck. Thank you. Blank Check is a children's Disney movie. That is so you shouldn't confuse the Philip K. Dick story. Yes, Paycheck. Thank you.
God, yeah, I hope you've not been showing your children some shit. Like, Dad, can we watch Bananas in Pajamas? Yes, here's Banana Fish. This can't possibly go wrong. Dad, why is Ash leaking jam?
No. Oh, Paycheck. I remember Ben Affleck fights with like a bow in that movie. What a movie.
Dear. Anyway, so yeah, like with Ubik as an example, like that was actually like written after Philip K. Dick experienced what was to him was like an almost profound kind of, I wouldn't call it necessarily religious, but I'm going very anecdotally from my own memory here. So if you know better than I about the history of Ubik, then take this with the pinch of salt it deserves. But like he had some sort of like extrasensory, if not like, you know, heightened, elevated like experience in response to, of all things, answering the door one morning to a Girl Scout selling cookies. Yes, really.
Wow.
And it was And that actually then featured in the book itself, and the book was his, like, you know, way of processing and trying to come to terms with what he had seen. He had historically also been quite a heavy drug user, and indeed A Scanner Darkly, the novel, as much as the film, was also similarly about what it did to people and him trying to pass, like, you know, how it destroyed and split people down the middle.
Mm.
So, yeah, there is certainly a very long and storied history. I mean, I've only touched the surface of it here. I'm sure there's plenty of other works that people could elaborate and point to me about, of people, you know, artists using art, not strictly speaking just for the entertainment, but also to relate and process and bring out and even, like drawing poison out, if you want, and then turning it into something useful with regards to their own experiences. And I think that might be what the ultimate thing that Matthew will do by singing. Like, he won't sing just because, you know, it'll be a fun thing to do, but because it'll be, you know, the way he will, as I described Mamoroshi, like, finally have it laying out a screen for so long after having been so silent. Indeed, that is his nature explicitly, on how quiet and reserved he is despite the trauma that has been dealt with.
Isn't that what Akihiko says, like, verbatim about his voice, that it feels like he's screaming even though he's not
you
screaming?
You are entirely correct.
Man, can I just, so you, something you said made a good segue to something I wanted to bring up, and that is the part where he sort of, before Mafuyu kind of leaves his house to go on walkabout to the beach eventually. I don't even know if he planned to go to the beach. I think he just ends up there. But when he's sort of typing on his phone, like starting to write, and he just like, it's like, you know, types in a hiragana, backspace, types in another hiragana, backspace. And then he's like, you know, well, screw this. This isn't going anywhere. I have to leave. It just reminded me that, like, how much writing sucks. Like, when you're trying to do anything creative, especially.
My God, you're not even. You have only, like,
Like, you know, analytical work is hard. Reporting and stuff like that is hard, but, like, I feel my mind is such that I've done that sort of writing so many times that I have kind of some basic blueprints in my head and can kind of get myself started. But doing anything creative, it sucks so bad. It's so hard, and it's like, but it's also amazing. Like, I've my feelings about writing are that it is an incredibly lonely thing. It's a very isolating thing, but it is also idyllic and euphoric. It's like fucking getting to the most amazing, like, treasure, or even like an incredible experience that's inside the most heavily fortified castle on earth, and it's just suffering to get in there, like to get started. Even if you're already started, I find every time I sit down to do it, like, to get back into it is like entering the atmosphere. It's exactly. Burning.
And to borrow your castle metaphor there, Doc, like, you know, you get in, you've broken in, it's been a real fucking slog, and you get in, and then someone, little voice you says, "I'm sorry, Shaden, but the plot point you're after is in another castle." Thanks, Brain. Yep. Yeah, like, folks, if you're not aware, like, I've written two novels and some other various bits and bobs, short stories, etc. I have spent upwards of an hour looking at a blank Word page, and then I come back to the same said blank Word page a different day, and I will literally be like a machine gun going, it's all come to me now. And the time you spend looking at that page when you can't think of what to write, it's absolutely excruciating, as you say. It's truly burdensome. It's just, ugh. So I can totally I
thought of you, and of course my own experience when that little brief moment happened, and I just was like, God damn it, this is so, like, true. Because it sucks so bad. There's nothing I want to do more when I'm failing reentry than just, like, go away.
Yeah, and for me, like, all of my writing has just been fiction for entertainment's sake. Like, going back to the point I made before, like, I wrote because I wanted to tell a story, not because any of the stuff that I've written is, strictly speaking, you know, processing my own thoughts in relation to trauma or an adverse event, you name it. So I had difficulty with that anyway. But then you've got Mafuyu, who what does he write about? Does he write about, because I mean, writing, is, you're often told, is about your own experiences, and he has an experience so big and deep and buried within his heart. Like, can he write about it? Like, I don't blame him for being reticent to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Whew. Oh, I mean, and we don't even know how long it's been since it happened. You know,
I regardless can speculate, and I'm going to speculate, okay, because of the fact it's based on seasons. You might recall in, I think it was the previous episode, that Ueno-Yama first formed his band in winter because it was snowing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was also snowing at the time that Yuki died. So if I had to guess, given that this is currently taking place in around the middle of the following year, I'd say it's been about 6 months.
Okay, that was my question, is it the following year? Like, what year are they in high school?
But then again, it was middle school. They meant that, what was the name? Cassie? I can't remember. It was on her sports shirt, but I didn't catch, unfortunately. Anyway, you know I'm referring to the orange-haired girl who picks up the episode by, again, reminding Ueno-Yama, oh yeah, okay, I don't know, like, if Sato, like, was specifically dating this gentleman, but I do know that this gentleman did die and knew him quite well, so be careful.
So I think it is okay to assume that they were, because of...
Well, he says outright he loved him.
So, well, there's that, right? I mean, but I guess you could have, you know, shitty people to be like, why do you want to make the show gay? It's just platonic love. They were bros, man. But, like, there's a part when he's talking to Blonde Kid, and he says, like, Yuki's mom wanted me to have the guitar, and the Blonde Kid said, oh, I forgot both of your parents, your sets of parents were okay with you two.
Yep, there's your line.
So to me, that's like... they were official going out, and their parents knew, and they were fine with it. Like,
yep.
In addition to the rumor, in addition to the flashbacks, in addition to you saying you love all that, it's like makes a really strong case that, to me, they were dating.
Yeah, all the evidence points to them being an item. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. All right, so next talking point from me. Let's talk about, you know, show, don't tell. And here's the thing, right? Show don't tell is not a one or an all or nothing thing. Like, you can do both, but there are times and places when doing both is advised, or just doing show is advised, or even just telling. Like, people say, for example, that telling is a bad thing in stories, and I've certainly railed against it before, but if you use it with deliberate artistic intent, that can work. However, I'm not talking about tell here, I'm talking about show. So let's talk about Mafuyu's long ass walk to the beach. Like him, you know, taking Google Maps for a spin and deciding just to, you know, go wherever he lands his finger on. This collection of scenes, which are interspersed with scenes of Ueno-Yama being with other people, specifically his basketball colleagues going bowling, which is important.
The true MVPs of the show, let me just say. Right now, those basketball kids are great because, God, they're such a comfort when the show is dealing in... it's very heavier, like, emotions that these two basketball kids just pop up and have a fun time. It's great. I love
that. Absolutely. But they're the point of contrast in that you, of course, have Mafuyu wandering the streets alone and observing the life around him versus Ueno-Yama, who's just there going bowling with friends. Like, being alone versus being with others. Why do I bring this up? Because Mafuyu, like, we have the music that goes, it's very somber, very mellow, almost kind of maudlin. We have multiple instances of Mafuyu, like, observing, like, a couple or a family enjoying themselves. And this probably isn't strictly speaking applicable to anime, because it's not film, but insert your own, you know, reference here to the Kuleshov effect, which is the combination of shots put together making more meaning than, you know, them in isolation. Specifically, right. Mafuyu looking at the families, and that's all he observes. He doesn't, like... you know, he looks in, like, a couple of places, like stores and such, but otherwise, the most, like, of his attention is taken on observing other people. And then we see later that he says, you know, I'm not lonely. So, I also want to, like, I want to point out a number of visual things that really help sell the fact that he is lying to himself. Because he absolutely is. First off, specific attention paid to the fact that when he's walking on the beach and there's only one set of footprints. secondly, all the attention paid to the couples, like just regular families or, you know, couples going out doing their thing. Thirdly, what is he carrying on his back? His guitar or Yuki's guitar? Does he actually use said guitar? This is, you know, Chekhov's gun in place here. Does he play said guitar? No. Does that mean it was there for no reason? No. It was there to show that, you know, he was keeping that around as specifically for the memory of Yuki, or rather, you know, as his burden, as I've mentioned before. Why else bring it with him? For all that Mafuyu will tell us that he's not lonely, the way that all of this is shot, the evidence we are presented, the music that goes with it, the presence of the guitar, particularly, tells us something completely different. And I thought it was bloody excellent. Like, this show is a slow burner, don't get me wrong, and I can understand, and I'm even feeling a tiny bit about if people are frustrated that it's not moving at a great pace. Like, we're halfway through now, and we still don't have much more concrete information about who Yuki is, for example. Nor have we even actually really got to grips with who Akihiko's, like, basement boy is. I'm going to call him the basement boy, I don't know why, but anyway. But, nonetheless, that slow burn is helping build up, like, you know, the kind of tension, like, you're shaking a soda can and waiting for it to explode.
Yeah.
And again, given thus far, like, one of its main feats for me has been it's not been experimental or out there. It's not been Satoshi Kon or anything like that. But it has been exceptionally well executed in terms of its editing and its direction. The execution is the key part there. And it's been doing great things with that. And that's certainly one element of it. I mean, it's not the case, like, you know, that Mafuyu say, like, I'm carrying, like, or even having in the monologue, he's like, I'm carrying this guitar around because it reminds me of Yuki and it drives me forward, you know, to know that I still have this with him, but I just can't bring myself to play it because it feels like I'm, you know, exercising his soul from it or some bollocks like that. We don't get any of that kind of overly raw crap. What we just simply have here is visual language telling us that, okay, he says he's not lonely, but come now, look at all of this. Look at what we're presented. What does that tell to us? The exact opposite.
It's pretty hard to watch, like, because, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, he's not responding to his texts, his friends say. Like, he is, like, really does feel kind of cut off from everyone. And there's that scene earlier where the other three band members leave together and he's just kind of hanging back, like, and then he has that whole day to himself. Part of me, I mean, I knew this wasn't going to happen. But just the way the shot was set up with the direct line of footprints going straight into the... I thought he was just going to keep walking into the ocean.
Oh.
Like, it
man.
Was... you know, it was a lot.
You're right, yeah.
It reminded me of when Walter White's wife walked into her pool in Breaking Bad, in a way.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, that scene was, that whole thing was wonderful. And I like how they had Uenoyama, even while he's with others in the bowling alley, like, you know he's thinking of Mafuyu and wanting to be with him and just kind of not knowing how to make that happen.
Exactly. All right, over to you. Let me let you do the guitar solo of your next talking point.
So I already talked a little bit about this, but and hopefully this will lead into a point that you have. I feel like you'll want to talk about this, but this episode had a lot of them, not them, him specifically, Mafuyu, revisiting significant locations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of time, you know, there's a lot of locations that they go to every episode, right? They go to band practice every episode. They're in the classroom every episode. But they haven't done the talk by the vending machine every episode. And so I think by showing us that, we're meant to think how reflect on Mafuyu's growth since he joined the band to now, when he's having this other talk.
You can call it checkpointing. Like, you remember this location, but this is a different thing that's happening here now, and then explicitly calls attention to the previous event, and therefore you compare them in your mind.
And the really significant one happens later on, I think, when, you know, they've been at the steps a couple of times before, but I think...
Yes.
Yeah, not since the first episode have we had this thing where Ueno-Yama wants to take a nap and he's going to go to those stairs and he finds Mafuyu, the boy, occupying his napping spot, staring off into space. Like, this is exactly the thing that happens in the first episode.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And boy, how different things are. How different are things?
Well, I guess,
in some ways.
I do have something to say about that as it happens. You were entirely accurate.
Tell me what you have to say.
All right, let's talk about sleeping. My personal favorite activity after drinking, and usually they tend to tie into each other. With drinking preceding sleeping, I don't like sleep drink that I know of. I hope. Oh, shit. That's going to explain
you
seeing.
Sleep in a tub of alcohol?
Not yet, but I will be having one built now that I own my own home. It's going to be a hot tub, and it's going to be entirely filled with stout. It's going to be fantastic.
Marvelous.
Oh, yes. Anyway, moving away from, you know, architectural nightmares 101, sleeping. One of the things I found initially interesting about the show, like, that I made a couple of, like, silly jokes about, like, oh, it's the millennial mood of Ueno-Yama constantly being asleep. I actually think that has more meaning now. So hear me out, right?
Okay.
Now, I am incredibly ignorant of two things when it comes to this show, so please take this with the caveats I'm going to give you, which is that, A, as a cis-het guy, I have never, honestly, like, really had a problem, or, well, a problem, really. Let me phrase this properly. Never really, you know, felt too confused or, like, you know, curious about my own sexuality. That's been pretty much, you know, a constant throughout my life. So I can't relate to people who have, you know, thought, wait a minute, maybe I'm not straight, I'm actually gay, or I'm bi, or I'm pan, etc., etc. And then they have to make, you know, come to the conclusion that, no, that is what I am. I've always been this way, I've just not believed or not known it. So, caveat number one being that. Caveat number two, I know next to nothing about boy love shows. Like, we covered Banana Fish, for example, and that's it? I don't think we've covered any others that I can think of that have covered this subject matter. None that spring to mind. Mm-hmm. So, take this with a pinch of salt, but I am actually of the opinion, quote unquote, again, big emphasis on opinion here, that Ueno-Yama's sleeping is actually a metaphor for him realizing his own sexuality. Hear me out on this. So, he spends so much of his time, like, asleep in the earlier episodes, but when he meets Mafuyu on the stairs this time around to go and have a nap, he doesn't go to sleep. He's awake thinking of his feelings as Mafuyu lays out, like, you know, that he truly loves someone in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't also talk. So I'm thinking that that's a mild, like, him not falling asleep there, even though he could have potentially done so. I mean, okay, yeah, it would have also been quite rude for him to do that, given Mafuyu was there. But at the same time, I think that that's what it's going for, the idea of him sleeping and then waking up.
Yeah.
Is, you know, a metaphor for his understanding of his own sexuality. You can also see that...
I was just going to say, I hard agree. Actually with this, and I think this is what you're supposed to think about the times he's really been awake, right? When he's encountered Mafuyu, and then when he's fallen in love with music.
Stone dead asleep, like in one of the earlier episodes, and Mafuyu walks in and suddenly he's like, hi, how we doing? Let's go, band guitar. Like, you know, like he's just had a pot of coffee.
Yeah, it's like I mentioned, in an earlier episode that, you know, falling in love can be like, you know, like hearing a song. And I think that there are parallels, right, between like how alive kind of music makes him feel and then how alive, like, falling for this kid, Mafuyu, makes him feel.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's the point where that became crystal for me. And I'll be curious to see, like, how that progresses from here on out. Like, will he simply stop sleeping altogether? Like, because the distinction in that scene, though, is he didn't fall asleep while Mafuyu was there, but he was still looking away from him. And he didn't also then actually communicate with him. He didn't, you know, even respond to the revelation that came out there. Although he did, of course, inform us through the classic inner monologue method that his feelings are of jealousy. Jealousy of having someone who loved someone else. And I can only wonder, again, because this is possibly the point where he realizes his sexuality for what it is, that maybe his jealousy is because, you know, he's had girls fawning over him for so long. Like, I really don't know her name, so just... What was the name of... What was the... We'll just call her Naho because she looks like the lead character from Orange.
She does! She really does.
Even though she's got the personality of the witch character from Orange and not Naho herself. But that's a lie. Actually, it's not even that bad, but you get my point. And also, I feel kind of embarrassed that I remember that little detail, but I can't remember this lady's name. Although it hasn't been voiced in dialogue, so I'll give myself a little bit of credit. But yeah, like, you know, Ueniyama, good-looking lad, tons of girls fawning over him, but he's never felt anything back towards any of them. He's just like, eh, whatever. I'm just having a nap. Can you go away, please?
Mm-hmm.
But now he, you know, has someone he has feelings for, even if he hasn't necessarily properly labeled or codified them. Mm-hmm. And that person said, I had someone who loved me and I loved back. And he's like, I've never had that happen before. That fucking sucks. That ain't fair.
Yeah. I think it's also, it's partly that, but then also partly like, you're mine, Mafuyu.
Yeah, that and that can be a potential source of drama and conflict as the show progresses.
Mm-hmm.
We will see.
I think we've covered actually most of the things, the substantial things I wanted to talk about. I have a note about the flowers coming out of Ueno-yama. That was really great.
Yeah. We do have a Patreon question, actually.
Okay, and then I wanted to bring up something from Patreon also. Why don't you read the question from the Discord first, and then we can talk about the Patreon comment.
Indeed. Coming in from our Discord, this is a question from Tallulahbell, which goes as follows. Have your thoughts on Mafuyu changed much since the first episode? Well, for my part, like, I think that it was fair to say, like, from the start that Mafuyu's attitude and his mannerisms, and this will relate to what you're going to talk about in a moment, I suspect, there was an apparent, you know, strangeness to them that suggested some event in history that has left him the way he is. And certainly that event has now been, you know, put out there for us to see firsthand, even if we don't have the full context of it yet. But there is something that happened in this episode, or in fact twice happened in this episode, that I found very notable, which regarding his conversations. So there's a point in which Haruki and Mafuyu are finishing up at band practice. It's just the pair of them. This is after, by the way, the moment in which Haruki, like, you know, tries to probe Mafuyu for, like, you know, questions about people he's loved in the past, and Akiko's almost, like, you know, shaking him by the throat, like, you know, shut up, shut up, shut up! But, like, that kind of thing. And can you ever imagine Mafuyu, like, prior to this point, ever putting someone on edge by asking a question of them? Or even asking a question, period?
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, because he poses to Haruki, and by the way, this is a great little bit of role reversal here, that Haruki himself was probing, you know, Mafuyu, like, have you ever loved someone in the past? And then Mafuyu responds with his own questions, and he is unknowingly caught Haruki in his weak spot with his feelings for Akihiko.
Yep,
nice little role reversal there. But that being said, like, Mafuyu is actually, like, dictating the pace of the conversation here, taking control of it, asking a question, a probing question indeed, an open question of quite a deep nature to Haruki. And all he's really done previously is go, what? And why? And band? And music.
Yeah, yeah. He's also, like, I think, just by asking questions, he's been able to tell Haruki something about himself, especially with the final statement he makes. Like, he's, all the questions he asks are hypothetical, and, you know, what would, you know, do you have someone you like? If they were to disappear, would you feel sad? Would you feel lonely? Would you miss them? And Haruki kind of stumbles around, choto, choto mate, I don't know. I wouldn't know what to say.
I left something in the oven. I gotta go. Bye.
Yeah. He's like very much, I wouldn't know how to handle it. I wouldn't know what to say. And Mafuyu says, I don't either. It's interesting how he says this. He doesn't say like, yeah, I would be the same way. Answer in a more, you know, counterfactual or hypothetical manner. He's very much as like, yeah, I don't know what to say either. Sort of giving the dropping the not so subtle hint that like, this is me. This is my real life. And you're right. This is also how I'm feeling about it.
Mm-hmm. So if to answer your question there, Suabel, like, I think that for me, I'm starting to see maybe that he can assert himself more, but has chosen not to, or possibly that the exerting pressure for him to do so hasn't been there. Like, he's slowly coming out of his shell very, very gradually. But to me, he is still a much the same, you know, kind little lad that he was at the beginning. And it's just a question now of him, you know, getting bandaged up, getting healed up, and how that's going to happen. But this certainly was a turning point in him actually expressing some agency. Now he actually has some, rather than just basically being caught in Ueno-Yama's slipstream.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think I sort of always expected my feelings would evolve to some degree. Because, you know, we're just not given a whole lot in the beginning. Given in the very first episode, right, to go on. But as the series progresses, you know, you start to see how much has happened to him. And how he is and isn't kind of dealing with it and coping with it. And he's kind of groping along, trying to find his place in the world, trying to find some normalcy, trying to maybe find something that makes him happy amidst his feelings of sadness and loneliness. And, you know, he's the sort of person that he doesn't really know how to get them out. I mean, he said so. He doesn't know how to express those feelings or deal with them. And I think, like, each person watching the show, the vast majority anyway, even if we're not like Mafuyu in that we're really, really quiet, reserved, or shy, I think that we've all kind of been in a place in our lives in which we've gone through something that affected us very deeply, and we don't know, our kind of inner voice doesn't really know how to translate it, how to process it, how to express it to other people, how to make ourselves,
yeah, absolutely,
yeah, like how to make ourselves like understood. And I think that's what's like really, really relatable about the character, and why I have grown to like him so much, and I've grown to see him as not simply a kind of the bottom of the relationship, like the submissive trope. I think that there's a lot more to him than that.
Are you saying Mafuyu tops?
No, I would say Ueno-Yama would top.
I think maybe the ending of the show is them arguing over that as they walk off down the street.
Yeah.
Maybe we should make that a poll. Who's the top? We'll let you all figure out at home.
Oh my god.
Ah, dude.
Oh man. Well, thank you, Tallulah Bell, for your juicy question.
Indeed.
Juicy.
Oh.
Yeah, you already made the soda reference earlier. So it was laying the groundwork for this one.
Thanks a bunch. Anyway, if you in turn would like to actually get some questions to us for our given podcast, and indeed get access to them as they come out rather than on a delay, feel free to consider becoming a patron. I believe it's the $3 tier that enables access to that. Am I right, Doc?
The Cinco, the $5 tier.
The $5 tier. Getting on the $5 tier will give you access to both privileges. So yeah, do check that out. All right, you mentioned, actually, speaking of Patreon, that we had some comments on our Patreon post that would be worth noting.
Yeah, I actually meant to talk about these before. closer to the time that they were made. But Dana on Patreon, not Dana, boss on Twitter, or Blue Sea Devotee, not that Dana, although she is also called Dana. This is a different Dana.
We are the double Dana here.
We so here we go. Here's Dana left some interesting comments on our given episodes. She says, do you think that Mafuyu might be autistic coded? And I believe I'm for some reason I'm unable to dig into the thread of comments at the minute, but I believe she has a family member that works with special needs folks, and so she has some secondhand knowledge of what that would be like. And you know, she says in a further comment, like, you know, because I said to her on Patreon, like, this is super fascinating, but this is not an area which I have any expertise. However, kind of representation of that sort is sorely needed at anime. And then she goes on to elaborate that, like, he's, you know, he's very slow to pick up on social cues. E.g., he comes into the discussion slightly late or says odd things which don't go with the flow of conversation. See what we were just talking about. lack of communication, lack of feedback. The moment where Uenoyama was teaching him guitar, and Mafuyu responded with simple one-word agreements without any polite lubrication, conversational lubrication, that is.
Nice clarification there. Good save.
Yeah. that's a commonly expected, that kind of the politeness stuff in Japanese is what she's saying. The polite conversational lubrication that's commonly expected. That was an example of perhaps him being autistic coded, and people with mild autism often keep things pretty simple, which can be seen as a sign of indifference, but it's just their style of communication. So so yeah, I thought this was all super duper interesting, and do you have any comment on it? I myself am not qualified, I don't think, to say
I'm
yes or no.
I'm going to be very blunt and say that I similarly am not qualified to answer that. However, I will say one particular thing. And this actually, funny enough, comes up with respect to Violet Evergarden, as it turns out, because Violet similarly has been described as having autistic traits.
Right.
Or even possibly being on the spectrum. Now, here's the thing, right? For both Violet and for Mafuyu, we can point to events in their pasts that are traumatic and could indeed lead them to be the way they are. Or it could be, you know, that indeed they are on the spectrum, to what degree that is up for you to interpret. I'm just going to say this, right. I am not qualified to answer one way or the other on either of those cases as it happens, neither Violet Evergarden nor in the case of Mafuyu. If that is your interpretation, though, I think that's a perfectly valid one.
Yeah.
Or you can interpret it as being a cut of the trauma, or you could indeed interpret it as being both. I think, though, that this is kind of one of those arguments where you could say that maybe if that was the case, it should be more explicit about it. Or then conversely, you can then say, well, making it explicit, you know, can be degrading, because rather than just making it, you know, a trait that people are... This is the thing, right? This is, again, why I don't feel so so qualified to talk about. All I will say is that there's plenty of reasons that you might relate to Mafuyu, which is, you know, the awkwardness in which he socializes, you know, the events of his past. If, you know, seeing in him that there is, you know, traits of being autistic, and that is, you know, something that you can relate to or understand or get behind, because you yourself may or may not have it, then that's good. And that is a perfectly valid interpretation. I'm glad the show sees that. So, yeah, I don't know, but I'm, for my part, I think that it can be either way, and it's entirely up to you to decide on that. And if, again, that is if that sees you as a result and is a comfort, then that's absolutely fantastic, and I'm glad for that.
Yeah, I think that you've said it very well, and I don't think I could add anything. That was very well said. That's all I have for my discussion points. I am really, really enjoying this series, Shtan. Every single week, I find it to be extremely well made. I find it to be very thoughtful. I find it to be very, very comforting, despite the fact that its characters are going through some difficult emotions.
Yeah.
And I think I just can't, I can't recommend it highly enough. Do you think, though, that it has, you alluded to this earlier, but do you think it's kind of on track to be where it ought to be?
I think the thing is with this kind of show is that you can point to a show being slow paced or fast paced, and that in of itself doesn't really tell you anything, because that can be very deliberate. Taking, you know, like, just to make a complete example about Thin Air, like, if you're writing a show that whose season is about an extended battle, like, compressing, say, like, you know, a mere 10 minutes of actual real time in that battle into, say, 6 episodes can be exhausting. And it will be exhausting. You don't see that often. So I think it's a question of whether or not the show's pace is deliberate. And if so, then ultimately it's going to be a your mileage may vary on how you feel about that pacing. I think that one potential area of concern, though, is that as much as I am glad to have Akiko and Haruki have their own things to do in the show beyond simply being supporting band members, again, quote-unquote, there's that joke, sorry. Just keep repeating them. What can I say? If it's good, just throw it in again. No one will care. But at the same time, like, there's plenty of material as is that we've not yet even delved into with, you know, Yuki and Mafuyu's reactions and how Ueno-Yama processes this, that I could see, although I'm not advocating for necessarily, a version of Given where Akiko and Haruki are indeed just side characters and not going through their own subplots, as it were. So, proof's going to be in the pudding, I think. It is going to be a case of your mileage may vary, and if you are thinking to yourself as you watch this that the pacing is too slow for your taste, I don't think there's anything wrong with you feeling that way, to be quite honest. I think you're entitled to think to yourself, could it hurry up a little bit? Because I can certainly see that. But all that being said, you also have to then bear in mind that the pace is more than likely, in my opinion, very deliberate. Getting past trauma or, you know, coming out of your shell or whatever combination thereof, it isn't a process that happens overnight. I can speak from personal experience here. It took me years to kind of become the person I am now. And even then I'd say, you know, I'm still not entirely fully functional. You know, just need a couple of upgrades, bit of hardware, all the good stuff. So the slow pace, therefore, in my opinion, could indeed be very deliberate, because it's not something that, as I say, you just click your fingers and you're done. So if you do, as I say, ultimately feel that way, I think that it's still fair to accept the show is doing that deliberately. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. Shows of a particular pace or, you know, speed aren't necessarily for everyone. I mean, you and I have watched a substantial chunk of, you know, oh my god, Gundam Wing. And god, that show was glacial. I've had washing machines that move faster than that piece of shit.
It's true. But Given is definitely the kind of show, which is a rare thing for me, that I prefer watching something once a week. I usually would like to do at least one episode a day, if not more. But yeah, I think this one goes down. That stuff is mitigated for me by the weekly viewing.
Indeed. Right, well, I believe that then concludes this particular look at Given number 6. I'm now actually very disappointed that we didn't do Given number 5, you know, and then start quoting Lou Vega last time. That is a catastrophic error on our part, for which I apologise to our patrons and other listeners. This will not happen again. If we do cover another episode 5 in the future where that joke can be made, you give me damn right we'll make it, by God. For Monica and Sandra and Rita, we'll do it. Anyway, thank you all, as always, for listening. It's always a pleasure to have you along as we cover these particular shows. If you are catching this at the point where it has now been released from the Patreon prison, that, you know, it's gone out, it's escaped to the wild, and you'd like to catch up with us on a weekly basis as these come out, and even chat with us in our Discord and get involved in, you know, asking us questions and gain access to other great content, do please consider becoming a patron for as little as $2 a month, up to $5 for the full access. And if you've discovered this on YouTube, iTunes, or SoundCloud, please, please, if you can, just drop us a like or a subscribe or a comment, whatever you can do, just to help our discoverability get us out there. That would be immensely appreciated. Otherwise,
if you're viewing this video on YouTube and you haven't subscribed to us, what's wrong with you? Hit subscribe, hit the bell. Come on, just click a button. Do it.
Smash the ever-living fuck out of your keyboard.
And look, this may sound a little bit vain, but look, I love our Discord channel, and it's getting to the point where I feel like it's full of such cool people that I'd want to drop a couple bucks just to talk to those cool people. And I don't even mean me, those cool people on a regular basis.
We've got people with actual talent in there, would you believe?
I know. It's
and we didn't
absurd.
Even have to hold them at gunpoint. They actually paid us for the privilege. What the fuck?
There's no accounting for taste.
No, absolutely not. But anyway, that otherwise concludes our show. So again, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back next week with Given Episode 7. But until then, have a great weekend, have a great week. And as always, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe. And a good night.
Take care, everybody.